Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful, fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar-S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Listen to that. Nothing beats a vinyl.
Some technology just stands the test of time. Our technology not only brings the cool, it also brings the heat. At Mitsubishi Electric, we've been mastering and innovating heat pump technology since 1970. EcoDan, continued innovation in heating for home and business. Mitsubishi Electric, changes for the better.
Real Life Real Crime is a true crime podcast brought to you by Woody Overton and executive producer Toby Templey.
Yeah, the right to remain silent. Anything you say can and will be used against you in a court of law. Right to an attorney prior to and during any question. You can't afford one, a court appoint one for you. You understand your rights?
Your crime spree was over, son. Yeah, you thought you had it licked. But Detective Overton made you should have turned to shit.
Warning, this episode of Real Life, Real Crime, the podcast, may contain descriptions of acts of violence or that are of a sexual nature. It should be for people that are 18 years or older. Heed my warning, people. I do not get the facts of these cases off of the internet or from some television show. The facts we're retelling you were presented to us by the victims of the crimes or the perpetrators who committed the crimes against the victims. My description of the crime scenes are what I saw with my own two eyes. If you're going to get offended, please turn this podcast off now. Thank you. Hello, everybody, and welcome to this episode of Real Life, Real Crime, the podcast. As always, I'm your host, Woody Overton. And today, I'm going to be starting, it's not going to be a series. I don't even know. I know it's going to be at least two parts, though. I'm going to call it Pad Tracks. It's PADTRAX, and I'll explain that probably on the second episode. But this is different, y'all, and it's unique, but I think it's something that needs to be told, and it's certainly something that's part of true crime in every criminal case. Before I get started, a couple quick shout-outs. I just want to tell you, all you lifers, I love you. Thank you, and I appreciate you. We're over 31,000 members now on a private group on Facebook that's Real Life, Real Crime Friends, Fans, and Crew, K-R-E-W-E. You know, patron members, geez Louise, I love y'all. Thank you so much, and you know, for your support. I appreciate it. And those of you who continue to take care of your yearly discount on patron members, thank you, thank you, thank you. Can't be a patron member, I get it. I love each and every one of you. And just please continue to do what you're doing. Y'all are making us go crazy because everybody keeps telling other people about us. And it's really helping me grow and making the show blow up, and I appreciate that. stay tuned at the end of today's, we'll call it an episode, I suppose. And I'll do all the regular podcast announcer stuff and maybe a couple updates. So I don't have any notes now. You know, on some of the past stuff, you hear me read things and stuff like that. I am raw and I'm unscripted. I have been wanting to do this probably for months now. And then I got involved with the Monsters series and I had no idea it was going to go 9 parts. But that was 9 hours, you know, of a really, really good story. But in that story, because of that story and because of what supposedly, and I have no direct knowledge, but supposedly that female was, you know, telling family members that the evidence was lost and stuff like that. It really, supposedly after she was pardoned, she was telling people that evidence was lost and stuff like that. And I want to talk about that. And that's what I want to bring knowledge and awareness, if you will, about evidence in criminal cases. And I'm going to give you an example of a case that I worked. And then I want all you lifers out there, I know one of you has had to have had a bad experience with evidence in a criminal case, or you know someone who has. Then I want you to message me. You can do it directly, or maybe I'll put a post on the crew page or whatever. And I want to start covering some evidence stories because it's so important. But more importantly, I found out how evidence can never get screwed up again and be the law enforcement's, I can't say any type of evidence, the major things can never get screwed up again. And it's an easy, simple solution that will save the taxpayers countless money, and it'll save investigators and district attorneys and all the powers that it be, just tons and tons of time and man hours, et cetera, when it comes to deal with evidence. So I'll just get started. And I really just don't have any notes, but I'm going to tell you a story that happened when I was working. And I'm not going to say where or anything because it involves another agency, but I was working, we'll say, as a criminal investigator and a polygraphist. And I got a call one day from a chief of police and he said, "Hey, got a really bad situation. Can we come in and talk to you?" I said, "Yeah, sure." So they came to my office and he came in and he said, "We have a real clusterfuck going on at my department." And he said, "I don't know what to do." He said, "But you know, we need to get to the bottom of it." And I said, "Well, you know, tell me what happened. Well, what's going on?" And he said that he became aware of some evidence issues in his department, and he had been becoming aware of it over the course of a year, but it finally came to a head. And so, let me see how I can tell this. Let me back up. Let me digress for a second. Let me give you the definition. I'm going to read this because I was trying to figure it out how I want to explain it. Let me tell you what evidence is, first of all right, the legal definition. Or not even the legal definition, but evidence in criminal cases. Law enforcement officers and prosecutors have a duty to preserve certain kinds of evidence. And it says the government has a duty to preserve a certain types of evidence it collects during a criminal during criminal investigations and prosecutions. This duty exists in order to protect a defendant's rights to due process and a fair trial under the 6th and 14th Amendments to the U.S. Constitution. The duty relates to the requirement that the government disclose evidence it will use against the defendant at trial, as well as any evidence that is favorable to the defendant. The duty to preserve evidence begins once any state agency or actor has gathered and taken possession of evidence as part of a criminal investigation. All right, so let me back up. If, let's say I'm working narcotics on the street and I pull you over and you're nervous and your pupils are dilated or whatever, and I ask for permission to search, or I go to pat frisk you, whatever, and I find dope on you, okay? Let's say I find a pocket full of pain pills. Now, in the state of Louisiana, you can certainly be on prescriptions for controlled dangerous substance, whether it's, you know, Adderall or pain pills or whatever it may be. But you have to, if you transport it from one location to another, you have to have it in your prescribed bottle, right? Well, let's say I find several baggies of pain pills individually wrapped for, due to my experience, I would say that was going to be for resale, right? Happened all the time, right? So when I take you, when I place you under arrest for those pills, then I take those pills into evidence. What I would do then, that immediately starts the chain of custody. And, you know, I take you to jail, I book you, but I have the evidence with me, right? The pain pills. Then I'm going to get a, we used to use like the brown manila envelopes, the legal envelopes, right? But you get an evidence sticker, and the evidence stickers are pretty self-explanatory, big black letters, evidence, and then season, agency, which means what department you work for, the date, the time, a list of what it is that you think that you took, and whatever the charge that you charged the person with, the file number, just a bunch of stuff that you had to write down on this pain in the ass sticker, right? And then you take the, you have to put the sticker on the envelope, then you put the evidence in the envelope, then you have to take evidence tape, which was harder to get than water in the desert. You know, they acted like it was gold, and then it was the worst shit you ever wanted to mess with. Came on this roll, and you had to peel the tape from its backing, and it crinkled real easy. Well, that's, and when it crinkled, it would tear, the coloring in it would tear. So basically that's used for somebody tries to open it. You could tell it's been tampered with. But anyway, so you have to seal the whole envelope. You have to seal where it licks and sticks to the envelope. That's got to be sealed. But anywhere there is a corner or anywhere where the envelope meets the envelope, it's got to be covered. And then you cover it on the tops and the bottoms, down the middle spine of the envelope. And then everywhere you have a slice of the evidence tape, you have to initial half on and half off the evidence tape. And why is that? Because now it's in my custody. I'm putting it in the custody of this envelope. I'm sealing with the evidence tape. And then I'm initialing. Now, when it's sent off for analysis or that's whatever it may be, maybe a knife used for trial, whatever it may be, when they go to open it up, they can tell the chain of custody has not been broken. They have to sign for it, first of all. And then when they go to open it up, they can tell the chain of custody has not been broken because that tape hasn't been jacked with, right? So then you have to do a lab submittal form, going back to these alleged pills. You have to do what they call a lab submittal form. And on the lab submittal form, it's a long, lengthy son of a bitch. But it starts out the agency, and back then it was in like triplicates, right? The agency, date and time of seizure, who the suspect was, what the charge is, description of the evidence. I mean, it's a long deal. Then the lab submittal part, what it needs to be tested for. I mean, it's a lot of paperwork, y'all. But it has to be done. And once you fill out the lab submittal form and you sign it, you have to turn that in with your piece of evidence. And let's go back to my Livingston Parish Sheriff's Office days. There were two ways you could turn in the evidence. There was a mailbox, a locked mailbox downstairs in the courthouse in what they called the civil office. That's where the sheriff handled all the civil paperwork. But that was something that was easily accessible to road deputies and narcotics deputies. People that worked after hours, they had the courthouse key, they can get in, and they had a key to that office, they could get in. Then you go to drop your evidence, and it's just like any other mailbox, right? You open, you drop it, and you close it. You can't open that bitch. But they had one lady in the detective's office who would go down. I don't know if she went every day or whatever, but when she would go down, she would had the key to the mailbox. She would open it up, get all the evidence, put it in a big box, take it upstairs to the detective's office. Now, this wasn't her only job. She did everything an officer was to do, from scheduling to transcribing the tapes to whatever, but evidence was part of her job. Didn't have a full-time evidence custodian. But she would have to go through this evidence, log into an evidence book that she had received it, and then schedule it to go to the Louisiana State Police Crime Lab for processing, okay? And back then, the Livingston Parish Sheriff's Office had to have an appointment every time they were going to drop off evidence. Well, they dropped off evidence once a week at, I think, 10 o'clock in the morning at the Louisiana State Police Crime Lab. And when I was in detectives, it was just shit luck of the draw. Or maybe it was good for you if you weren't busy, or if you just wanted to take a ride for a couple hours and burn up your whole morning and eat lunch at Baton Rouge, right? But if you were the detective, you were, you know, if she could grab a hold of you that morning and be like, hey, you know, do you have anything going on? I need somebody. It's Wednesday. I need somebody to take the evidence, right? So you get this big box of evidence. It could be firearms, dope, whatever. You don't know what's in it, but you have to sign for it from her, continuing the chain of custody. Sign for it from her. Then you take it to the Louisiana State Police Crime Lab in Baton Rouge. And in at 10 o'clock, you go, they let you in one at a time. And at 10 o'clock, they buzz you in and you go into the secure thing, and they have two evidence technicians that would process your evidence. Now, they would take each individual item of evidence out, read the file number, they log it into their system, they go through on the lab submittal forms if it's narcotics, and let's say the deputy didn't sign it or whatever, they refused it. All right, you had to take the evidence back and give it back to the lady, reverse the chain of custody, et cetera. You know, if there was any kind of screw ups, it had, you know, they would catch there. They were very meticulous. So anyway, you turn over the evidence to them. Then they'd go and send it to whatever department needs to go to, whether it's firearms to be tested for ballistics or narcotics and what have you. And it's, who knows how long it's going to take? Who knows how long these different technicians are backed up and all that? But of course, dope would be the most, or narcotics would be the most prominent one, or the busiest section, I would believe. So anyway, so you turn it over to them. They take it. So they establish a chain of custody. They have it in their lab, right? Well, at some point, before you leave, they give you your return box evidence. And this may be evidence that's been processed over the last year or year and a half. You don't know how long it's going to take to process each individual piece. But at some point, when your weekly appointment came, you got a box of evidence to take back. Then you took that box of evidence back to her, one of many hats she wore, evidence lady, and she would do whatever the hell she did with it, right? Which was, I know, like if it was dope reports, they would send it to the district attorney saying, yeah, it was positive for narcotics or green leafy substance or whatever. So that's basically how it works. Now, this is important. Now, there are no criminal cases that don't involve evidence, all right? And so the chain of custody is everything. The first thing I'm going to attack as a criminal defense attorney is your chain of custody on evidence. Why? Because if you, let's say you charge me for dope and I can prove that the, you know, the evidence was ever tampered with or chain of custody wasn't maintained in some way, it gets thrown out. Evidence gets thrown out, charge gets thrown out. Same way on any of it. Shit, evidence is everything. And I don't think all the true crime fans out there, you focus on the blood and the guts and the murder and rapes and stuff like that, but every crime that's committed, there is evidence, okay? And so evidence probably takes up more time for law enforcement agencies and district attorneys than all the other man hours combined. If you put it together, now when she gets the evidence back, like I said, she's got to send it to the DA or do whatever. Then part of it's got to go in a vault, and some of it may get stored up. And back then for the Livingston Parish Sheriff's Office, the old evidence room, if you want to call that, was the old jail upstairs. And that's like shit where you send evidence from, you know. I've had to go look for evidence for cases that were coming up in that old jail, and each jail cell was stacked from the floor to the top with boxes and bags full of evidence. And some of them would be labeled, well, for like the months or the years. And shit, you had to dig for it. And you didn't want that job, right? Especially during the summertime when there's no AC up there. It's like being in the attic. And you might look for days for one piece of evidence. So man hour time is ridiculous. But the importance of the chain of custody on evidence and being able to show what you did with the evidence, who took it, what that person did with it, and where the process it goes through and till it comes back, until it goes to court. And if it doesn't go to court, let's say it's DNA evidence that gets entered in a CODIS or it's a cold case or whatever it may be, it gets stored. I mean, again, evidence.
It's springtime, boys. The grass is green, the birds are chirping, and the kids will be out of school soon. That makes it the perfect time to plan a family vacation. And we know from the stories we cover that this is not exactly the time to take the family to the Caribbean. You don't want to end up in the middle of some cartel drug shootout. So this year, it's time to take an international journey. And of course, a big international trip is just one reason to learn a new language with Rosetta Stone. You might have a different one. Maybe you want to connect with family or friends living overseas. Maybe you want to acquire a new skill for work or better understand a certain culture. Rosetta Stone has helped me have fun with my mother and at least have partial conversations in Italian after only a few lessons.
Rosetta Stone is the trusted expert for 30 years with millions of users and 25 languages offered. Spanish, French, Italian, German, Korean, Chinese, Japanese, Dutch, Arabic, Polish, and many more. Rosetta Stone immerses you in many ways. No English translation, so you really learn to speak, listen, and think in that language. Intuitive process, you pick up a language naturally, designed for long-term retention. Speech recognition, the true accent feature is like having a personal trainer for your accent. Rosetta Stone is convenient and an amazing value.
That's right, Woody. A lifetime membership has all 25 languages for any and all trips and language needs. That's lifetime access to all 25 language courses Rosetta Stone offers for 50% off. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, Real Life Real Crime and Daily Show listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/today. That's 50% off, unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/today.
Sayonara.
All right, guys, we've never had an intervention on the show, but we're going to have one right now. And this applies to both of you guys, but perhaps a bit more to Mr. Overton.
Must be alcohol.
Well, you know, neither of you guys are 25 anymore, and sometimes you need to take a break away from the alcohol.
Oh, Lord.
So I want to talk to you about a healthy alternative to alcohol that can be just the right fix after a stressful day. You know, Woody, like a day after 10 crazies from Wisconsin come into town to kill 1,000 wild boars, and you idiots end up killing 1,000 Shinerbocks at the same time.
That's going to happen.
Well, I know it is. And so I want to tell you about a product called Recess Mood. Think about it. Even the name sounds relaxing. Recess Mood is a delicious sparkling water infused with functional ingredients like mood-lifting magnesium and stress-balancing adaptogens, so you can relax without the alcohol or the hangover. Now, while Jim is looking up the meaning of adaptogens, I'll continue on. Real Life Real Crime and the Daily Show listeners get 15% off the Recess Mood Sampler Pack at takearecess.com/RLRC. That's takearecess.com/RLRC. You can enjoy Recess Mood after a busy day or whatever you need to relax and unwind. Recess Mood is made with real fruit and comes in four delicious flavors like strawberry rose and raspberry lemon. Those sound yummy.
Yeah.
It's only got 20 calories, doesn't have any sugar in it. So I don't know if you've ever had guilt, Woody, but if you do, Recess Mood could help you get rid of it.
Guilt, but I've had the pain of not having recess.
Okay, well, you deserve a healthier way to unwind. Head to takearecess.com/RLRC and get 15% off a Recess Mood sampler pack. It's your go-to alcohol replacement.
Because everything. Now, let me get a little bit into my story, and then I'll try to explain to you what I'm getting at. So, back to that time, that chief comes in, and I'm not going to say who it is or anything. They came in with one of their people, we'll say. And he's like, look, he said, I got alerted by the district attorney's office that we have evidence issues. I said, okay, tell me what's going on. He said, well, you know, it took chief about a year and a half ago. And he said, when we, and theirs was a smaller department, and they had an evidence room, but it really was like a walk-in closet, but only a couple of people had access to it. So just like the lady who had access to the mailbox to try to maintain the chain of custody. But he said that the DA reached out to him and was like, hey, where is, or not to him, to his department, backing up again. There's a lot of assistant DAs, y'all. And I mean, you may be dealing with four or five different ones just in the 21st Judicial, which like in Livingston, then they have ADAs in Tangipahoa Parish and in St. Helena Parish, et cetera. So there's a bunch of them. So it's not uncommon for you to have a different ADA on different cases. It's not just one person you're dealing with. But anyway, he said he would, his office was getting calls from different ADAs over the past year and a half asking about, hey, where's the evidence at on this case? Where's the evidence at on this case? But it was from different ADAs. And they were asking about it because the person would get arrested. They would get booked in. The evidence would be taken, like I told you, and taken into their evidence locker and supposedly sent to the lab and all this. And so the person has to make their initial court appearance. Of course, they're going to plead not guilty. Then they get a motions date, like 3 months down the line, 4 months down the line or whatever. And generally by that time, the evidence has come back. The DA is able to look at it. You know, when they get up there to do the prosecution, they're doing like 50 people in a day, right? So they're looking at the files. They have the files pooled, but they look at it as they get to it, and they get to it. And the judge says, let's, you know, the state of Louisiana versus whomever, and where we're at. And the DA would look at the defense attorney would say, well, Your Honor, we hadn't received confirmation from the lab that it was even narcotics. And the DA would look it up and say, oh, Your Honor, the lab report hadn't come back yet, right? Can they continue it again? Another 4 or 5 months, whatever. And comes time for it again. And the DA doesn't know. They don't have time to follow up on all that shit, on all these cases. And it would come time for the next motions here, and they could look at it. And the defense attorney says, Your Honor, we haven't received anything from the prosecution. And prosecutor is kind of caught off guard. They look in the file. Guess what? We don't have a Louisiana State Police Crime Lab report saying this was narcotics, right? So they ask for a continuous again. Well, shit, about the fourth time that happens, they're like, you know what? I need to check on this shit because the judge chews them out. And so they call the department and say, hey, I need to know what the status is on this evidence that y'all submitted. So then we get time to time, they would get calls like that from different ADAs and then the same ADAs. And finally, one of the district attorneys called up. The chief said, he said, look, she called me personally and was furious and said she got to continue 4 times because of the lab results not having come back yet on the evidence. And the judge dismissed the case, threw it out. They said, well, you know what? This is ridiculous. It's been too long. The case is dismissed. And the DA was demanding, I mean, that's a bad look for them, right? So the DA was demanding, the chief said, I want to know where the hell this evidence report is, and we need to make sure this doesn't happen again. Then that ADA went back and started looking at other cases from this department. Guess what? Certain types of narcotic cases, she didn't have, she never got a lab submittal back, form back, where the crime lab says it is or isn't dope. So he said when she called, she chewed him out about it. He went to look at it and he pulls the log file from the file number. Now, let's say Officer Joe Blow arrests Tommy Doodoo Head on, you know, January the 20th of 2005. Well, anybody that was, any evidence that was submitted from January 20th, 2005 to February, whatever, to the next lab appointment, and for them it would have been it wouldn't have been every week like it was for the Livingston Parish Sheriff's Office because it was so much bigger, that all that evidence in that period of time, like ours was every week, and then all that evidence that was turned into that evidence locker was submitted to the lab at the same time. He goes and pulls it and looks, and it's says on the book that it's been submitted, and calls the crime lab. They said, nope, don't have that file number. Remember, I told you these lab technicians at the crime lab, they don't play, and your shit had to be correct. It's like, well, that doesn't make any sense. It says it was sent in the box of evidence on such and such date. And she said, I'm telling you, there's no file number in our system of any evidence. There's no trace of any evidence having been done like that. And he was like, oh, shit, man. And so he said he went to the evidence room with another person because you don't want to go in by yourself in case something happens, right? Chain of custody. Went into the evidence room, starts looking for this one case in particular. And, of course, it's like any department that doesn't have a full-time evidence technician, even the ones that do, there's so much evidence they have to dig, and they dig. He said, we spent 4 days, Woody, 4 days digging, looking for this one piece of evidence. And he said, and guess what? We found it. The problem was when they found the evidence envelope in the lab submittal form, was covering it up. It was supposed to have these pain pills in it. They picked up the envelope and it was empty. Somebody had slit the bottom of the evidence envelope, like with a knife, and shook out what was inside, evidently, right? Well, that's a problem, okay? And that would have been a problem enough if it wasn't just the one case. So now you know you have a problem. You know you have a chain of custody problem. This case is done. It's cooked. And, you know, Joe Doo-Doo Head's walking the streets free. That's not the freaking problem. The problem is now you got to go back and check all your shit. And they did. And he said, we spent the last month and a half going through the evidence room and with like three different people that he could trust. And he said, we logged in and out and all this, you know, the times and all that. And they found a ton of cases that on the forms it said it had been submitted to the lab. On the book it said they had been submitted to the lab, but they had never been submitted to the lab. And the evidence, when they ended up finding these evidence envelopes in the lab submittal forms, all of them had been cut open. And there was no doubt. And all of them were some type of pain pills, okay? And he said, what do we do? And I said, well, you got a clusterfuck, Hoss. Yeah, and I had to think about it. I said, well, I mean, you know, first of all, we're going to have to look at everybody, you know, who had access, who has keys. And he told me, and I had to think about it. And I was like, well, you know what? I mean, you're in a real shit show. And because all these cases are going to get dismissed. And then, you know, all your other cases, and that any kind of evidence you've taken in this time frame is going to get challenged when the defense attorneys find out about it. It could be anything from rape to whatever, and it doesn't mean they're going to win. And then the real problem, y'all, you got people who've gone to prison during this time based off of evidence that was in this freaking evidence room. And I could just envision doors opening and all throughout the Department of Corrections on appeals because somebody was stealing freaking narcotics for pain pills, right? And so I was like, shit, man. I mean, this is really, really a shit show. It's a bad deal. And I said, just let me think about it tonight, and I'll come to your department tomorrow. I said, I want to see the evidence room, et cetera. And I did, and I thought about it. It was one of my 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning OCD things, and you know, I went over there and I met with him. I looked at the system and all that. And look, this evidence room, if you'll call it that, when you walk in, you're supposed to log in, and you walk in, and it's floor to to ceiling shelves, a little bit bigger than a walk-in closet, I guess. Just stacks. You can't fit any more evidence in this thing. I mean, bags and boxes and just tons of shit. And I'm like, damn, man. And it reminded me of the old evidence room at the Livingston Parish Jail. Just, I mean, what do you do? You don't have a person that's going to go in there and organize all that. And then I told him, I said, hell, you're lucky you've ever found any of it. He said, I know, right? We need to do something and think of all the time they spent on it. But so we got his office. I said, listen, obviously this is a criminal investigation. I said, but we need to do it as discreetly as possible. And then I said, you're going to catch, yeah, I mean, your sugar has turned the shit off. I mean, it's going to be a real issue. Yeah, it's going to get out. And of course, the district attorneys are going to have to make people, you know, the defense attorneys aware and stuff like that. I said, I can't begin to tell you the repercussions that are going to come back on this. So I said, the only thing we can do is try to figure out who it was and hopefully get a confession. And, you know, the rest of the shit's on you. I don't know what you're going to do. I said, obviously, from the dates that you have, it started before you got here, before you were elected. And he said, yeah, that's my one saving grace. But so I told him, I said, what I want to do is I want a polygraph. And then he said, okay. Yeah, the people, my people that had the keys to the room, I said, nope, I want a polygraph. Every swinging dick, Tom and Harry, in your whole department. I said, and that includes you. And he looked at me, I said, that's right. I said, if I'm gonna work this case, everybody in this department is a suspect, including you. Everybody in this department is a suspect except for me. And I said, I know, you know, chances are you didn't have anything to do with it. I said, but you may have. I said, shit, I don't know. And he was like, he said, dude, how long is that gonna take? I said, it's gonna take a long time. You know, I mean, you're looking at 3 hours at a minimum on the polygraphs for each person. Now, it wasn't that big a department. I think it was like 33 people total, and that included the reserve officers. And he was like, man, why you gotta polygraph all of them? I said, because if we don't and we find out who it is, we get a confession, they're gonna come back. They can always come back and say, oh, you were picking on me, you had tunnel vision and all that. So we'll tell you about that. Polygraphs on not being admissible in court and all that. Well, fine. Whatever. Okay. But the deal is you cannot force anyone to take a polygraph under the 1988 Employee Polygraph Protection Act. Normal. You can't even request your a normal employee to take a polygraph exam. You can tell them about a lost theft situation and say, hey, we have this situation and we're going to bring a polygraphist. Would you be willing to? But you can't demand that they do it unless the provision under that law, there's a provision under that law that excludes government agencies. I think pharmaceutical companies, you know, police departments, stuff like that. High risk. I guess you'd call it high risk, not high risk, high security issues. Right. And so police departments one. Now here's the deal. I'm the chief. I can tell Officer James, hey, I need you to show up tomorrow morning at 8:00. You're going to do a polygraph for Woody Overton about some missing evidence. Well, Officer James shows up and comes to do the polygraph for me. I go advise him his polygraph rights, et cetera. And he was like, well, you know what? I don't want to take it, but the chief said I have to. And so under the 1988 Employee Polygraph Protection Act, normally you wouldn't have to take it. I said, actually, you don't have to take it. He's ordered you to take the test, right? And they're like, yeah. I'm like, okay, well, they cannot fire you for failing the test, but they can fire you for refusing to take it under the 1988 Employee Polygraph Protection Act, the government, the security threat thing, that the employees that can be compelled to take the test, it's the craziest thing here. They can be, you can order them in certain agencies that you can order the employees to take the test. You cannot fail them. I mean, you can't fire them for failing the test, but you can fire them for refusing to follow the direct order of taking the test. Anyway, so I explained it to them. I said, you know, they could come in and if they don't take the test, they refuse to, you can fire them. And I said, but you can't fire them for failing the test. And he was like, well, I don't understand. I said, well, you know, where else are you going to go from? So I'm totally going off the top of my head. And I'm telling him, so listen, we got to bring them all in. The word's going to get out. You know, you're going to do a little damage control, but I'm going to start scheduling. And I think it was like 33 people total, but that's everybody, y'all. That's from the chief to the secretary to the reserve officers to just anyone. And why is that? Because this evidence room didn't have any type of electronic monitoring on who entered or didn't enter the evidence room. Now, they didn't have a video camera, right, over the door, which most places didn't. Livingston Parish Sheriff's Office didn't have that back then. There was no monitoring of it. They didn't have an alarm on it, you know. So the deal is, I'm pretty good at picking door locks with credit cards. I mean, I can do it, right? And so in my mind, I'm thinking, what if it really wasn't someone who actually had key access? And so I wanted to test everybody. Like I said, everybody's going to be a suspect except for me. So if it was, I'm just thinking outside the box at 3 o'clock in the morning, like, I got to test everybody because it could have been somebody who has knowledge on how to pick a lock to get into the door. But the key factors that we had going were pain pills, all right? And so let me tell you about that. The best people in the world develop bad addictions, okay? I mean, you could be the holiest whatever. You know, best Christian or best human being, the best moral person in the world. And unfortunately, even those people develop addictions, whether it's they get into a car wreck and prescribe these pain pills, and that's what helps them get through the day. And then, you know, they get off, doctor says they're healed. Well, guess what? They still have a physical addiction to the pain pills. And let me tell you something, pain pills are probably worse than any other narcotic out there. And that's where the big problem with heroin comes in today is before it was heroin, it was Oxycontins or Roxys on the street. And that Roxys or Oxys were a pain pill, right? And a severe pain pill. Yeah, but they were very, very expensive. And that's where all the doctor shopping and all that came in, and these pill clinics. Well, guess what happened when the government shuts those down? Or people began to find out that heroin gave the same high, but much more intense, but much cheaper. And a bad thing about heroin is, and the reason we're in the, you know, when we talk about COVID being an epidemic, and talk to the people who work the street about heroin and how many overdoses they're working a day. And it's just bad shit. So pain pills, you know, because it causes a physical sickness when you don't have them in your system, it actually causes your body to get sick and the, you know, throw ups and shitting on yourself and, you know, shakes, whatever, fevers, whatever, it's there. That's a real deal. I mean, it doesn't, but again, the best people in the world, I can almost say through no fault of their own, start on these things and then spiral out of control with it, right? So I figure that's, you know, this person, there wasn't any money missing, right? There was no money missing. There's no firearms missing. I mean, they had to inventory all that shit in that room. And I mean, you know, 12, 14 hours a day for a month and a half, however long, however many man hours that is, and how many, what, hundreds of thousands of dollars probably that department had to spend on that. But all the other shit wasn't missing. So in my mind, you know, this person's got a serious addiction to pain pills. And why wasn't the cocaine missing or the ecstasy or...
Do you guys know what May 12th is? Sunday, May 12th?
Mama's Day.
That would be correct. It's Mother's Day. So let me ask you, do you basically get your mom the same gift every year for Mother's Day? Maybe some flowers, some chocolates, maybe a robe or a framed photo, right? Boring stuff, right?
Right.
Well, let me tell you about something that's totally cool and different from Mother's Day that will never wilt, spoil, or put an extra 10 pounds around her waist. I'm talking about MyLifeInABook.com. It's a unique service that turns your mom's life stories into a beautiful book. Pretty unique. Cool, right?
Right.
Here's how it works. Every week, MyLifeInABook.com will send her a question via email. These can be pre-written questions about her life or any custom questions you wish to ask. Your mom can either type a response to the email, or she can record her voice if she prefers to do that, or she can do both. Cool. And MyLifeInABook.com then compiles all of her responses into a beautiful keepsake book, as well as an audiobook. And if you want, and she's up to the task technically, you know, the audiobook is a great extra thing to be able to do. Imagine discovering stories about her youth, adventures, and the challenges she overcame. This book becomes a legacy, something you and your future generations can treasure. Your mom's given you a lifetime of stories. This is kind of your chance to give her a way to share them. Every family's a little bit different, and in my family, we love to give each other a really hard time. So I've taken the approach in doing this of asking my mom to comment on some of those family moments that might be a bit embarrassing to other family members. Last week, my question was, Mom, did you feel guilty that day you hit me over the head with your wooden clog and Dad had to take me to the hospital for 8 stitches? Mom's response, back in the day, I was the disciplinarian of the house. And when you were 8 years old, you refused to get out of Nancy's, that's my sister's, plastic kiddie pool. I told you 10 times to get out of the damn pool. You didn't listen, so I chased you around the yard. And when you slipped, I nailed you right on the head. That was the last time you got in that kiddie pool. Of course, Dad had to lie to the ER and tell him that you fell on your head, but I nailed you good. The entire process with My Life in a Book is simple, and in the end, Mom will have a great keepsake that can remain in your family for generations.
Check out MyLifeInABook.com and use code RLRC at checkout for 10% off. Create an unforgettable gift for your mom this Mother's Day. That's MyLifeInABook.com and use code RLRC for 10% off today.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
The weed, right? Because they weren't using it. And so I'm looking for someone who has a pain pill addiction. And probably, I'm thinking as an investigator, that probably it is going to be somebody who has access to the room. I mean, because most people don't know how to pick doors and stuff like that. But I told him, the chief, I said, listen, I want them all. And we can start scheduling. I said, I want the people who actually have access by key. I said, first of all, you need to take all the keys and change the keys and nobody gets in it except for you or one other person. Y'all go in together at a time from now on to correct this while we conduct this investigation. So, and of course they had done that already when they found out the shit show it was. And so I said, I want the people who actually have access or had access to it to come last. Now, y'all, you don't get access to the evidence room and have the trust placed in you in the evidence room to go in and handle that kind of stuff unless you're way up there. Okay? And there were only a couple of people who had access to the evidence room. And the problem was, and it wasn't a problem for me. The problem for them was I knew them all. And I had worked with them over the years. And now it's going to be investigating them from a criminal standpoint. And the problem for them is they knew I was going to get the juice, right? So, I mean, it was kind of a bad deal, especially when, you know, you're going to be testing. A lot of them I didn't know, but the ones that actually had the access, these were people I can't say that I just came up with. At some point in time in my career, as I developed my career, I knew them. I had worked with them, whether it's on a standoff or a manhunt or whatever. I'd see them in court. And I mean, I'm talking about you put your lives in these people's hands and in them and yours. And now I have to investigate them from a criminal standpoint. And one of the questions I got last week on the Ask Me Anything episodes, somebody asked me, did I ever have to investigate one of my friends or coworkers? And I had said no, other than on a few occasions where I had to arrest a cop for whatever. But I really wasn't thinking about this, y'all. So this was one, and it wasn't going to be easy, but it is what it is. So they started setting up the appointments, and I scheduled 4 a day. And under Louisiana law, the polygraph law, and yes, there are polygraph laws that the polygraphists have to follow, they generally don't want you to test. I mean, 4 a day is like really pushing it. And the American Polygraph Association guidelines and Police Polygraph Association guidelines, you just don't do. I think 4 a day really is frowned upon, to be honest with you. I think 3 a day is enough, because you as an examiner, polygraph examiner, you have to be sharp and you have to get through the process. And I want to explain the process, and I'm probably going to run out of time for this week. The process is, first person comes in and I greet them, tell them who I am, tell them to have a seat. And the first thing I do is advise them of their Miranda rights. And y'all know what they are, but I read them the Miranda rights, not under arrest, but I want to question you about missing evidence from the evidence room at your department, right? So I have them initial every line, sign it, that they understand the rights. Well, fuck, they understand the rights. They're police officers. The consent to question. Hey, I was doing it all legal. You know why? Because I never knew when some jackass was just going to just throw up a confession on my desk. And I'm like, oh, shit. They like on the David Constance case when Christina Constance came back. Tina said, these ladies need to talk to the detective. You have a minute. And I didn't. But I took them back there. And her friend said, she wants to tell you something, but she doesn't really want to get in trouble. And I was like, okay, go ahead. And she said, my husband's making me have, made me have sex with his 16-year-old nephew. I'm thinking, general Livingston Parish bullshit, right? And then in the same, the next breath, she says, and he makes me my own son's. And I was like, oh, stop, Miranda. So anyway, that's why I did it, even though they're cops. I Mirandized them because I just never knew what somebody was going to tell me. So I Mirandized them, consent to questioning. Hey, they didn't have to say shit, right? Even police officers. You have police officer Bill of Rights. I mean, they have their own right not to say, to incriminate themselves. So I get that. And then I get into polygraph rights. The polygraph, there would be the surprise questions. I'm summarizing for you. Something like, the process would be explained to me. There'd be no surprise questions. I don't have to answer any questions that I don't want to. And can stop the polygraph examination anytime that I want to, blah, 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 blah. And under Louisiana law, you have to give the polygraphist permission to actually administer the test to you, all right? So that was the next step. And then once you get them past polygraph rights, then you go into the medical questionnaire. Now, the medical questionnaire covers everything from what type of medicine you're on, to how many hours did you sleep last night? When was the last time you ate? Have you had any major injury or surgeries in the last 6 months? It's like going to your fucking doctor's office and filling out the thing ahead of time. Have you ever had this, whatever, right? So when we complete the medical part, this the pre-polygraph test, complete the medical part, the polygraphist then has to make a determination as to whether or not the examinee is mentally and physically fit to sit and answer the questions for the examination, right? Or sit through the polygraph test. And hey, some people weren't. Some people were jacked up. I'll get into it next week because I'm running out of time. Some people are not, when they appear, and I learned it after the case, the false positive case where they had that poor girl up for, well over, between her going to work the day and then being kidnapped and held overnight, and they had her up all day, the FBI questioned her shit, and then bringing her to me 48 hours later. I shouldn't have done that test, right? But I was a rookie. I wasn't a rookie this time. And so I get them through the medical part, determine whether or not they're mentally and physically able to take the test, and boom. Then I go into the reason that we're there. And I'm going to say, hey, you know, I always, on this case, on every one, I'm going to say, look, you know, obviously you're here because they had some evidence issues at your department. And I would say, I want you to tell me everything that you know about this from A to Z. Paint it like a movie for me, right? Act like I know nothing. And I would kick back and I would listen to them. And some of them didn't know dick. I mean, they were like, I don't really know. I heard a rumor that some evidence was missing from the room, you know, and I would ask them, well, have you ever been in the evidence room? Whatever, you know, just general questions, picking their brain as to their knowledge of the situation. And then once they completed it and we got done talking about the issue, and I said, well, look, now we need to make up the relevant questions for the test. And the relevant questions for this are simple. I said, they're really, really easy. It's just going to be, you know, I think I used two questions that you faced, but it was, did you slice open any of those evidence envelopes in the evidence room? No. And I think the other one was, did you take any of that missing evidence from the evidence room at your police department? And I define that question as any of the missing evidence. I would come back and tell them, I said, listen, there are pain pills, narcotics that are missing in X amount or of cases, of envelopes were sliced open. You know, and that's the first relevant question. Did you slice it open any of those evidence envelopes? No. And the second question was, did you take any of that missing evidence from those envelopes that were sliced open in your evidence room? No. Boom. Easy. Easy peasy, right? Then I had, you know, the rest of the questions developed, which are irrelevant questions and or control questions or direct allies, whatever the hell you want to call them. Doesn't matter. But those had to be worked in. Then you give them a full explanation of how the polygraph works. And once all that's done, I would attach them to the instrument and run a practice or an acquaintance test in which I have them lie to me on one out of eight questions. I wouldn't know which question it is they chose to lie about at the end of that test. I would tell them to answer no to every question, including the questions that they were going to lie about. And at the end of the test, I would tell them which question it was that they were lying about. And it always gave them the bug eye factor, if you will, right? When I tell them, oh, you were lying about. And as soon as I could watch it, ask questions, y'all. I said, you know, did you do such and such? And when it came to their question, I would hit it, right? Their physiological responses would hit up and blow up. And at the end of the test, and I would say, as soon as I turned it off, I said, the test is now complete. Please remain still. 25 seconds, turn the instrument off. And I say, okay, you were lying about questions such and such. And they go, boom, eyes pop open. And I say, guess what? If I can catch you lying about something that's irrelevant like this, that I actually told you to pick one of these questions to lie to me about, I said, but I told you how your body responds, your physiology inside of your body responds when you lie. I said, if I can get your question on something that's irrelevant to you like that, a direct lie that I told you to lie to me about, I said, what's it going to look like when you lie to me, or if you are going to lie to me on these relevant questions about the evidence being missing, and when you know you got criminal charges and everything else coming down the line? So that's called setting their psychological set. And at that point, they're holy shit, and they got all the stuff attached to them, and they're boom. And then once I knew I had their psychological set correct, I would then do the tests. And I'm gonna stop it now because I'm pushing an hour. So definitely gonna continue into it next week. I'm gonna tell you what happened in this case. It's crazy. All right, and then I'm gonna tell you what happened in this case next week, and then I'm gonna tell you about another case that is even more shocking, and it has to deal with a rape that a guy is doing life for, an aggravated rape, but it's evidence issues on this, and I'm gonna tell you about that. And then I'm gonna tell you how all this shit can be fixed. And it's absolutely blew my mind when I found out the systems and the technique that had come up to solve all this, all these man hours, all this chain of custody, all this stuff is now easily fixable and has been fixed in many departments around the United States. And we'll go into that later on. So I'm stopping to right there for today. Now, updates. And y'all, I know this is outside the norm, right? I mean, this episode, but I think it's so important. I think you can find it very interesting when you find out what happened in this case and the rape case I'm going to tell you about and how to fix it. All right, now stop it. Courtney Coco, you know it. John Bel Edwards, March 1st, before they can have another grand jury in the state of Louisiana because of COVID. Man, I'm so fucking tired of that. But every time I get that and I look at her picture on my bedside and in my truck, And I get a little bit discouraged about it, and I think about it, and I'm like, you know what? How dare I get discouraged when that family has been dealing with it for 16 years? 16 years I've been dealing with for a couple, you know? And so that makes me, it doesn't make me any less mad, but I guess buys me a little bit more patience. But y'all just hang in there and keep praying. I think you're going to hear some things that are going to be interesting soon. Miss Barbara Blunt's case, please, please, please call in your tips. And yes, it's the height of COVID, right? And yes, the difference is, on Courtney's and Miss Barbara Blunt's is Miss Barbara Blunt's has a professional law enforcement agency. Sheriff Jason Nard and Livingston Parish Sheriff's Office that want to solve this crime, and they're working with me, not against me. So the Justice for Barbara Blunt, the hotline tip line is 225-395-1302. Local advertisers, I'm going to say this again, y'all, we're doing it for all these national companies, and I'm not complaining. Patron members don't have to listen to the commercials. I'm not complaining. I know I'm blessed to have podcasts that has such a following that we can, make some of the money on the commercials. But I would rather the commercials benefit local businesses. I'm all about support local. So if you want to advertise, we have the sky is the limit on it. I mean, everything from social media to public appearances to, especially after COVID, to the podcast commercials, whatever. I mean, we're open to anything. And we're working with some local companies now, and that's pretty cool. So y'all, if you have a local business and you want to blow us up, and we have all the demographics and the big package that goes with it, that we had to submit for the national companies. I think you'd be very surprised if you saw the numbers, because the lifers rock, lifers rule. I do hashtag lifers rule, and they are the best fans in the world. So follow me on Instagram at Real Life Real Crime or at Overton Woody. Patron member, or you want to be a patron or find out about it, go to patreon.com/Real Life Real Crime. And again, they have that deal. We just started offering like a month or so ago, 2 months free with the annual membership. And y'all are blowing that up, and I appreciate it. Facebook, y'all, we have all the different Facebook pages. Real Life, Real Crime, Lamyap page. You can go there. I think it has 4,000 or 5,000 members. You can go there and post anything you want. If your life, you got to be admitted to the group, but you can go there and post anything you want. Like if you sell stuff or recipes or whatever the hell, anything that's not true crime related, go to the Real Life Real Crime Lanyap page and join you. That's a lot of cool stuff in there, y'all, and go check it out. And our Dream Team moderators will get you approved there, or the Real Life Real Crime Friends, Fans, and Crew page. You have to be admitted to that. That is strictly true crime related, unless I make an exception. That page, y'all, is just really interesting. I interact with everybody on it, but there's a lot of stuff that's on there, and it's not for the faint of heart. So, I've been maxed out on my friends on my regular page on Facebook forever. It's at 5,000 members. and Facebook cuts me off at that. So I get friend requests every single day. I like a lot of them. And I'm telling y'all, I can't, when you send those, I can't even respond to it. I can't accept that it says you have passed 5,000 members. So I have the regular Real Life Real Crime page, or you can email me, woody@realliferealcrime.com or whatever, right? So I guess that's it. I'm gonna get off the high horse for today. Not the high horse, but all this podcast stuff. And I know I'm over an hour now. But LOPA, I always end with this. LOPA, the Louisiana Organ Procurement Agency. And I started this new thing last week. I have a map of the world with all these countries on it. I mean, so many pins and all these countries across the world. I pick a different one. It doesn't matter if you're from Louisiana and you want to be an organ donor. You know, you could be from anywhere in the world, basically. You go to LOPA.org and sign up to be an organ donor. Be a hero. Give the gift of life. And let's say one of our listeners in Myanmar, M-Y-A-N-M-A-R, whoever you are, I'm sure it's only one or two of you. Y'all, you could go there. Y'all could go to LOPA. You don't have to be from Louisiana to do it. It is my passion, and I'm going to be doing some LOPA stories in the future on homicides and how their organs save lives. So that's it. And I'm Woody Overton, your host of Real Life, Real Crime, the podcast. And until next time, or ever, don't let me catch you down on Murder Bayou. Peace.
Get ready, you're gonna do time. Real life, real crime.
Real Life, Real Crime is a true crime podcast brought to you by Woody Overton and executive producer Toby Templey.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.